Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I'm Kenny Bedwell, your host, and I am here with the one, the only, Mr. Tyler Coombs.
Tyler with the hair.
I'm working on my intros, man.
It sounds good. You have the voice for radio.
I don't, but it's okay. It's really nice, though. I appreciate it. Yeah. So anyway, everybody, Tyler Coon is a savvy realtor. He's also savvy.
I like it.
It's not the name of the show. Anyway, he's a realtor in Asheville, but we're not here to talk specifically about him promoting Asheville. We're here to talk about the how he found deals. He owns short-term rentals. He doesn't just sell them. He owns them and runs them. He even had a management company at one point too. So he's very familiar with the game. But one thing though, that I thought was really interesting, Tyler's story, is that he doesn't just go and buy properties that like everybody, oh yeah, this is the home run, you know, like super obvious. He finds opportunities in the market to find deals. And in the part one episode, Tyler, I was kind of telling you this before the show, we were talking about this, like I call it secret deal finding strategies, which they're not that secret. They're just like not obvious, you know?
Yeah.
And so I want to start out with talking about your current prop, the one you got recently, and the success you've seen, how you've seen it. So tell a story of it, and tell us how you found it and your theories behind it and the whole thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So early last year, I think it was like January or February. I may have even actually put it under contract in like December of 2021. I found this like 5,500 square foot house on the MLS, and it was sitting there for 6 months. Like nobody was buying this thing. And at that time I was selling short-term rentals in Asheville, but we weren't hyper focused on a certain like property avatar yet. And so what I like to do is, you know, I like to buy properties that I'm going to test out for my clients. I'll be honest, I make way more money as an agent than I do like as a short-term rental owner or host. So kind of what I like to do is go out there and do tests for my clients so that I can then go try to sell those properties that I bought, kind of like that. So I put this place under contract. One thing that's a little bit unique about what we're able to do is we're able to carry some of the seller paid closing costs into furnishing and design costs. And I won't talk a lot about that, but just know it's a trick we can do. It's super helpful in 1031 situations, which we've done a couple times. So we bought that for $850. I brought through $50,000 in seller credit on that. We had some of that applied to closing costs, about $20,000 of it we had left over. So we used that to paint the inside of the house. But it was just this massive kind of like a maze of a house, right? We put in 6 bedrooms, including one kid's bunk room, which also we turned into a kid's game room. We did an adult game room. We turned the 2-car garage into a movie theater. We did a great fire pit area outside. We were the first ones to build like that octagon fire pit that you see everyone building now. At least as far as I know, it at least in our area, but I was the first one of anybody I knew too that built it. So we built that. It has swings around the fire pit. It's really cool. And we underwrote that property like around $165,000. There were other 6 bedroom properties around it that were doing $150,000. And I thought to myself at the time, like, I'm conservative, but I'm also aggressive, right? And I look at those properties and I go, like, they have like a hot tub and a fire pit and plastic chairs. That's it. Like nothing special about any of them. And so I was like, okay, well, if those are all doing $150,000, my goal then will be $165,000. So, you know, we got that property, we launched it, we designed it ourselves. So it was okay, right? Like it was good, but it wasn't like awesome, awesome. And I went on vacation on a Hawaiian cruise. I turned my phone off, like literally had no connection, nothing for 10 days. And I let my assistant at the time launch my price labs. She actually never ended up putting any guardrails on it. So she just like put it in price labs and then like never put in a base, a minimum, a maximum, no length of stays, like nothing in there, no settings at all. And I came back 10 days later and we had $100,000 on the books.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, we were only underwriting this for 165.
And so what you're saying is the pricing strategy here is, you know, we just, just Jesus take the wheel with price labs, right? Just let it go, right?
So, well, then we plateaued. And so then I met a revenue manager. This is when we first started hearing about revenue management last year. And I was like, I'm too busy. I don't even really care what it does at this point. It's going to pay for itself. I'm way too busy with real estate. And so we let a revenue manager take it over. And then it really proceeded to book out like crazy. And we ended up booking about $250,000 for year one. In the last couple of months, I had some like water issues. So likely we're actually going to end up more around 210 because I had to get rid of about 6 weeks of bookings. I'd do a bunch of refunds because of a water issue. But if that hadn't happened, I would have been around 250,000, which was, I mean, it was amazing. We're just coming up on year one right now. I launched it last June.
So let me pause you there. Let's get a kind of a recap synopsis. So number wise, so you're making 210 this year, potentially 250 with the refunds, which I'm sorry, that sucks. That's still great though. So, okay, we'll just take the 210 for right now. What was the purchase price again?
850, but I had 50,000 in seller credit.
Okay, that's awesome. Yep. 850, how much did you put into the property to get ready to go?
We put 80,000. And so I would say 20,000 of that was seller credit. So probably a total of 60,000.
Okay, wow. Wow, that's crazy. Do you have an idea what your cash on cash return and all that is, or what your cash flowing or anything like that?
I haven't done it since then, but I looked at everything and it really looks like if I was going to do the 250, I probably would have been at about 150 in net profit. And I probably put about 150 into the property as well. Mm-hmm. So it probably would have been about 100% cash on cash. It's probably going to end up being a little bit less, but at the end of the day, you know, it's over 50, right?
Right.
So like there's a point where you just stop counting, right? But what I did with that property, actually, like it was, we had to furnish so much, but we actually took a bunch of rooms to go bedroom sets, and they were financing at the time for 72 months for 0%. So I'm like, why am I not going to take advantage of that? Cause that's just free money for inflation. And how true did that end up being? You know?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Those like, you know, $1,200 furniture packages are like, you know, $2,000 nowadays.
Right.
So that ended up, you know, helping lower our input. And that bill has been like $300 a month or something like that.
I think that's great. And the property is obviously paying for it. Right. So you're like, you're using the property to pay for these things. I see too many people. Now I know not everybody wants to finance everything, but I see a lot of people come in and they want to just buy everything out cash, you know, even the amenities. So like, oh, I got a budget. Like the people are like, I need to add a pool. And so I got a budget $100,000. Well, that's not going to work. It's like, well, you can finance some of these things too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know it's a preference, but like, that's how you can make some of these deals work. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds stupid. Like I bought a hot tub last year, 5 years, 0% down. Okay. Yeah. 0% interest for 5 years. Like it's only $12,000. I walked in with $12,000 and they told me that. And I was like, done. Like the property's going to pay for it. And I don't have to put in a single dime. Like I'm going to take my 12 grand and go put it into something else to make the money and make even more money. You know what I mean? So it's like we can do these simple level things to increase the cash on cash return and make the deal sweeter by just like getting a little creative, you know, leveraging
literally like thousands of things. I think at this point that can affect what a deal is going to do. So when somebody like zeroes in on one thing, I'm like, it's really frustrating for me because I've seen the other 999 things you can do to really make a deal work. So it's tough, you know. I mean, and it makes sense. There's a lot more risk nowadays at higher interest rates and higher payments for amenities and design and furnishings. It's a lot more risk than it used to be. And it was never going to remain as risk-free as it was, right? Like at 3% interest rates, it was so easy and you could run something. You remember how it used to be, the like goal used to be, well, can you make it work as a long-term rental? Now that nobody even asked that question.
Yeah, I know, right? That's right? True.
Because you're like, it never works, right? But that used to be the big question. Like, can you also make it work as a long-term rental? And so the risk is there, but the reward is greater nowadays. We've seen people make way more money after 2022 than before it, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you look at Airbnb's, you know, growth as a platform, it's still growing. Demand is more and more people are using it. And so that means revenue, the amount of revenue, the amount of dollars is more in the market. It's just who gets those dollars.
Yeah.
So, and that's the key. So now when it comes to finding deals, you know, in your market, and I know you've got agents all over the place, so I can speak for some other markets too. What kind of strategies, now that you've done this one, okay, which is really unique, you know, the whole 5,000 plus square footage, doesn't have views, you just added the amenities, you know, that's awesome. What are you seeing in other markets? Are you seeing other strategies out there that work that people can take advantage of?
Yeah, 100%. I have a good example here as well. And it's, you know, actually had to have this conversation with my team the other day because somebody said, all my clients keep trying to go to Asheville because you can only make money in Asheville. And I was like, it's absolutely not true. You have people here complaining all the time they're not making money. It's in the Facebook groups every day.
Yeah.
Just like every market. And so I think it's been weighted really heavily. You know, it used to be like bottom 50th percentile would complain they're not doing well, but they were also the weekenders and maybe they were only renting in one season or they're doing it kind of as a hobby. And then you had the top 50%. Now I think it's more like an 80-20, like you have 80% of the people at the bottom and then the top 20% nowadays. And those top 20% are not online shouting from the rooftops how great they're doing, right? They're quiet, you know, they're busy first and foremost, like hosting all their guests and making all their money. But typically they're also busy like with their day jobs that they use to put in all the amenities and the design that it costs to launch a top 20% property. But anyway, so there are these different types of avatars. I'm a really big fan right now of really huge places or really small places. And if you think about it, really, America is just full of the 2 to 4 bedroom. Like that's just what a normal family would live in anywhere. So when you find a 1 bedroom with a loft or a 6+ bedroom, it's already in and of itself totally unique. It's really funny because right now there's a lot of people online saying things like, make sure you find something with a view. You can't replace a view. Well, I've run the numbers on that. And in Western North Carolina, there are way more places that have a view than our 6+ bedrooms.
Oh, right? In fact, I was just looking at Asheville yesterday, and I think there was an SCR Insights, and I think there was only maybe 40 properties or less than 40 that were 6 bedrooms. It was a drum.
Yeah.
It had 3,000 listings. And, you know, the 90% are 1 through 4 bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, then it dropped, you know, it's like maybe 60, 70, 5 bedrooms.
Yeah.
And then you have less than 40, 6 bedrooms. And it just really drops off after that.
Yeah.
It's a big, big, big difference.
Yeah. And what's interesting, especially about the bigger and the smaller places, is I think they'll get more valuable as well as they cash flow really well. They're also insulated. I think you'll have less competition over time. So just like I did last year, I don't even know if you know this, but I bought another one. So we have one this year. We're getting ready to start doing design and amenities. I finally hired a real designer, so no more rooms to go furniture.
Yeah.
And so we bought a 1 bedroom with a loft. Amazing views, but it's also out in the total middle of nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Purchase price was $380. I mean, it was nothing. And I don't have anything with views. It's actually our first property with views. And so just like we're going to test it, it's in the middle of nowhere. We're putting $150,000 into turning it into just total luxury, high-end couples retreat, even in the middle of nowhere. So you have a lot of people online talking about proximity right now. I'm not saying that views or proximity are bad, but I'm just saying that there are other metrics in a deal that matter. I think it's uniqueness. You know, proximity is unique. I think size is unique. The number of people you can sleep is unique. The view can be unique. So we're going to try this out. We're going to try out a 1 bedroom with a loft and then deck it out as a luxury couples cabin. We're putting a sauna, a sunken in hot tub, and a sunken in cowboy pool, cold plunge. So they have the whole spa experience and everything. So there are different types of deals that work everywhere. And that's why it's really important to work with somebody like Boots on the Ground that knows what they're doing, boots on the ground. And I think it's even more important than ever to have somebody there to kind of double check that data, right? So our partnership between STR Insights and then me with our clients, boots on the ground, the properties are turning out better than ever. the mm-hmm. best numbers we've ever seen, because now we're kind of like looking at things from both sides.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're saying too is that you're finding strategies based on guest avatars, right? So like you're going after couples are traveling to your market for different reasons than like a family would.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe couples like the just all together, like, you know, coming to your area, like you're not going to see a lot of just like families from like Charlotte and some of these other cities just go, oh yeah, we're going to go to Asheville. It's more like couples, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to Asheville for a different like getaway, the spa, like that's a huge thing in Asheville. You know, I've seen people travel there just for that, you know?
Yeah.
And so that like that changes how and what you look for in the market. It's not just about views. It's not just about proximity. Like you talked about, it changes. But if you don't know that, if you're not doing that research and studying the guest avatars out there, you know,
yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to lobby a softball on this one, but how do people figure that information out?
Yeah. I mean, it's literally about partnering with the best people now, and the market has totally matured. So you can find those best people. They're typically pretty out there. You can call Kenny, you can call me.
And I want to hold off on that real quick. So like your area, I do know it because I have family there and like I travel there a lot, but like other areas, I don't personally know. And the data isn't going to scream it out loud. So I think like, I know you're being modest, but like, I'm kind of saying, don't be like, just be like straightforward here. Like highlight that, emphasize that, like partnering with the right people. What does that mean?
I think it's finding the right agent, boots on the ground, and having somebody that knows the data from a high level. So you're getting the macro and you're getting the micro, right? Like I know the streets, literally. Like that's something that you're never going to learn, all of America's streets, right? Like you need somebody boots on the ground for that. But I also need somebody from a macro level, because there are things that work here in Asheville that will work somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, like, I don't know, there's... Everybody's always asking, I'm sure you probably get this question more than anybody ever, what's the best market to invest in? Honestly, I still think that every market in America is investable. And I still think that every single day, the best deal that ever happened is being bought as we speak in some city or another, right? It could be still Orlando, it could be Destin, because things fluctuate, things change. You never know what position a seller's in, or what sort of deal you get on creative financing, or what sort of deal you get from a bank that might have not been available yesterday and won't be available tomorrow. So there are literally thousands of variables that change it. So it's working with an expert that can kind of balance all of those things and balance all the metrics. And they also know the history of where things have come from and where they're going to and how those trends are changing.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Cool. What?
Don't call me. Just call me.
Just call Kenny. Just call Tyler. Call Tyler. So what else? What other strategies, what other thoughts do you have for maybe a new investor looking in someone who's not familiar? You know, we talk about Asheville all the time, and let's sit on that market for a second. So Asheville, what advice do you give new investors when they're looking in your market?
New investors, I think the biggest thing is not to get stuck in one property. Mm-hmm. Like I always tell everybody, I think the number one thing that affects whether a property is going to work today or not is their confidence level in the property, which is a variable, right? And I always tell everybody, like, if I send you a property and I'm like totally gung-ho about it, that makes sense because I have a lot of experience here, but I'm not going to ask everybody to just trust me blindly. They have to also feel good about it. They have to be able to get behind that property. They have to be able to see what I'm seeing. And if they can't, then just move on. Don't try to force the property, because inevitably what ends up happening, the only people I've ever seen fail in short-term rentals in my market all over Western North Carolina, and I guarantee this is so true for a lot of areas outside of things you can't avoid, but the number one most avoidable thing is that you make a plan of what you're going to do with the property, you buy it, you close on it, and you go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to see. I'm just going to test it. I'm not going to do that whole plan. I just want to see how it's going to do. Because then what happens is your weekends get filled up and your weekdays stay empty and you're running a price race to the bottom, trying to compete with everybody else in your area instead of what your plan was, which was to run an amenity and design race to the top and insulate yourself into that top 5 or 10% in your market. So get really comfortable. figure out your plan ahead of time and then execute it 100%. And if you can't execute a great plan on a property, find a property you can. Even if you think it's a great property, if you can't fully execute on that plan for that property, I see a lot of people saying like, well, phase it out, do it in stages. Nobody does that though. Nobody does it. Nobody like takes their property offline next year. They get comfortable, they move on, they move into a different season of their life. So if you can't do it right up front, don't do it at all. Find a property you can execute the plan on.
Gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's good. Let's talk about the value add stuff because we're seeing that a lot more and more. So when you see properties, what are your thoughts? First off, what are your thoughts on buying a turnkey property? Do they exist? Are those good deals?
No. Look at the Smokies. How many turnkey properties are there? You know, there's thousands of them just sitting on the MLS at this point.
Yeah. Okay. So there's no real good turnkey deals out there. So if that's the case, we have to make them right. So we have to be able to invest into these properties. So do you have any rules of thumb or do you like kind of have any like, we're going to have to invest at least this, like what, how do you help people understand budgets and things like that? Cause it's not just about what you get pre-approved for by the bank.
It's how much you have sitting. I mean, the industry's maturing, right? Like, you know, this is an investment. And so inevitably, right, more and more money was going to come into it and the quality was going to improve to a level where, and this is life, right? Like no matter what your opinion on this is, like this is going to push the common people out, you know? I mean, and it's sad that that happens and it's just a fact of any investment out there, right? Like how many people can buy Berkshire Hathaway A stock anymore, right? It's like $270,000 a share or something. So, you know, it's like what's happening right now is you have these like really good operators coming in with enough money. I mean, nowadays it's really rare. You'll hear me say it's going to be less than a six-figure budget. I mean, it's really tough. And they're still out there, so don't give up. But from like a volume amount of standpoint, most of my clients are putting in more than six figures into design and amenities nowadays. And it's probably the best investment you can make. So in terms of value add, some rules of thumb for me, unfinished space by far and large is the number one thing you can do. And then what you look for is you look for space that's as finished as possible. So like I saw something online this morning right outside of Asheville that had this big basement and it even already had drywall up, but the drywall just wasn't finished. It had floors, it had ceiling, it was heated and everything. And they couldn't count it. 600 square feet. They couldn't count on the MLS. And the place is like $300 a square foot, right? Mm. So there's $90,000 in value right there. And you know, really, really simple to finish that. Wouldn't nearly cost $90,000 to finish that. So I'll give a good example, and I'm sure that others are going to see this example out there a little bit more here as this deal comes to fruition. But one of my designers, Ishida, here in Asheville, bought that log cabin for $625. They put $450,000 into it. You have people online right now saying $450,000 is way too much to put into an Airbnb. Don't do it. It's the worst thing ever, blah, blah, blah. And I get it. You're trying to protect people. You should protect people. And sometimes as long as you make the plan up front and then execute it on it the way that you need to, it comes out the right way. So the property just reappraised for $1.375 million. They're doing a DSCR cash out refinance. Their interest rate's like 7.5% on that, which is really, really good for right now. And they were able to pull $406,000 of cash right back out of the property. So now, with holding costs, you know, for 1 year, sure, maybe they're into that property for $100,000, but in the first 30 days, they took 150,000 in bookings at like 25-30% occupancy for the rest of the year. So we're looking at this property going, oh my God, if they don't do more than 300, like we'll be surprised. And like that will only be 60% occupancy. And this is the best property ever. Probably it'll do more than that. So they have very little cash in this property now, but they did all the hard work. They took the risk, you know, and it is risky. And you know how I know it's risky? Because the third property that they bought, they put $250,000 into and they were about to launch it and it burned down. So it's really risky, right? Like that sort of stuff can happen, but it's like, that's what you have to do nowadays to really make it work. And it doesn't always have to be 450. You can do that on a smaller property too. Sure. Sure.
Yeah. No, we're seeing like 100, 150, stuff like that on these smaller ones, but yeah. But what they did there though, and I think what's really important to note is that they forced appreciation, right? They took the 625, they put a lot of money into it and they got it appraised at 1.375 or something like that. So that's crazy. We call that stirring, not burring. It's stir. Short-term rental rehab, rent, refinance, repeat.
I love it.
Stirring
the pot. That's what we're doing too. We're always stirring the pot.
Stirring the pot. Always stirring the pot. Yeah, I've gotten good at that recently. So anyway, yeah. So value adds, you know, essentially putting money into properties to fix them up, but you're willing to invest. And I think if you're listening to this, it's important because these are some of the key things that you have to do in order to cash flow is you have to invest in these properties. It's a business, right? Like we're trying to actively create a business that's going to be successful and got to invest in it. You can't be afraid to do that. Just like any normal business. It's just a sign that the industry is starting to mature. Right. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree with that? And you disagree? Like, yeah.
100%. 100% agree.
Well, awesome, Tyler. As we kind of wrap things up, I always like to ask this last question with the name of the show, Cashflow Positive. You got some experience here. What are just any, it could be about anything what we talked about, anything else, random, I don't care. What are, like, give one good tip on how somebody could cash flow better with their current property or a future property?
Revenue management right now would be the number one thing. I think it's amazing what we've seen happen. And so we launched a revenue management company recently. It's B&B Labs. So thanks for giving me some time to do a little shout out there. But I'm really proud of it, honestly. And this is a business in where I have three other business partners, which is not typical for me, right? Mm-hmm. But I knew that a business like this is what it would take because I have two operations guys who are just, I mean, they're literally like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're certifiable geniuses. And we've taken revenue management clients from other revenue managers that say it's night and day. In fact, we did a class the other day, did a little online education, and one of our competitors was in the class. And you know what he said? He said, guys, this is over my head. This is way better than anything I'm doing. And he's like, I'd love to continue learning from you guys. So revenue management by far and large, I do believe that on that property we were talking about earlier, the 5,000 plus square foot one, I probably would have done about 175 on that property without revenue management. And it just made my life so much easier. I never had to log in and do it. It's the best $200 a month I ever spent. So I think that right now is totally changing the game for people. And it's still so untested. You know, I think it's a massive, massive secret sauce. What do you think? Is that, have you tried it? What are your thoughts on revenue management so far?
I think as the industry matures, people are going to have to focus more on what they're good at. And most people are not good at revenue management. And so we're going to see more and more of these revenue management companies come about and people have to rely on them because they're not going to be able to compete because they're not good at revenue management. They're not taking the time to learn it, which for most busy professionals, that's okay. And really what we should do, like if you take, like we look at a similar industry, like the hotel industry, okay? The person who owns the hotel building is not doing the revenue management.
Yeah.
I don't know a single one that is, okay?
They're like a data scientist. There's somebody smart doing it. Exactly. Somebody smarter than me.
Exactly. And so that's where the industry's headed. And if that's the case, like, I talk about it all the time, you should be leaning into your zone of genius, which is like your specific area that you're good at. And most people are not good at pricing. And so learning it, if you love it and you want to figure it out and you take it on by all means, but you're going to have to be good at it or you're going to have to hire someone to be good at it. And if you have a property that's generating over 100K in gross revenue, it is a no-brainer to pay someone else who's really good at it, $200, $300, $400 a month, or even $500 a month to do your revenue management, because the return on that will be 3, 4, 5x. So in my opinion, and this isn't, you know, just a plug for you, but you gotta have it. If you're listening to this and you have one of these super properties, you got to have, like when I say super properties, you're making over 100K. You've got to have a call with these people. You've got to just look at what they're doing, because I guarantee you, whatever the rates are, they will 3, 4x it easily.
Yeah.
And so how it's going to go. Like I still play around with my pricing, but I have a VA that's learned and doing it for me because I can't do it. And so I still have to like do the strategy stuff, but I just don't have the time. And everybody else is going to be the same way too, if you're successful in building a portfolio the right way.
Cool. Well, we'll take over yours.
Maybe. Yeah. Tyler, so what's the best way? Well, okay. We talked about revenue management. So I'm going to put up a little banner here because people watch this on YouTube, believe it or not.
People are going to see this?
Probably. Yes. Yes, they will. Yeah. So what's the name of the website people can go for the revenue management?
bnblabs.io. So go on there, reach out to me on social media. We are just at the forefront of this whole revenue management thing right now, I think, guys. And we've literally seen where, like, you know, if this ends up costing you $2,000 a year, $2,200 a year, like that's one booking for some of these properties, right? It's a 2-day booking for some of these properties. And then you never have to mess with it for a year. So not only are you buying your time back, but likely you are getting that 2, 3, 4, or 5 times return. So it is a total no-brainer. And what's really cool when you hook up with the right people in the industry, there's a lot of really, really cool stuff that we're working on right now. We're working on, an Orphan Knight AI. Right? Why is there not an Orphan Knight AI bot out there talking to your guests, trying to upsell those? Because as much as everybody's online talking about them, you're not doing that on every booking. Nobody's actually doing that. You know, maybe there's a few people out there, but I'm not doing it. I'm certainly leaving money on the table. So I think what's really interesting going back to acquiring a property is, like, you spend all this time like underwriting it and you want to feel 100% confident. And then you know what happens is you launch that property and you leave so much money on the table in like 50 different ways. Like focus on those 50 ways after you buy it, you know? Like don't buy a bad property just to buy it, but like don't get so much analysis paralysis that you never buy anything ever. If you're looking for a property for 6+ months, you are already doing something wrong. And probably what you should do is just hire somebody to tell you what property to buy at that point that has a good track record of it. You know anybody like that?
Nope. Just kidding. And yes, we'll come reach out. Yeah. And let's just figure it out. Sometimes it's something super simple or stupid, like you're looking in the wrong markets. Tyler, to wrap up here, what markets? I know you've got Savvy Realty. You've got a large team. What markets are you guys in, by the way? I forgot to ask at the beginning.
Oh my goodness. It's like a quiz right now because we've gone into so many new ones recently. Okay. So I'm here in Asheville, and that includes the high country. We're in the Smokies of Tennessee. We're in South Florida, which is Fort Lauderdale, all the way down to Miami. We have a massive 10%, $100 million a year producing team in Branson, Missouri now. And they cover the Ozark Mountains down there. We're in Southern California, Bourbon Trail and Red River Gorge of Kentucky. We're in Nashville, Tennessee, Washington, D.C., Luray, Virginia, the Poconos of Pennsylvania, the Finger Lakes of New York just came on last week. So we're growing like crazy. It's literally giving me chill. Like as I'm saying it right now, my arm hair is sticking up right now. Like going through all these markets. It's so cool to see this all come to fruition, but man, I'm going to feel really bad if I missed anybody's market. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, upstate South Carolina as well. Mike Posick, my friend, he covers Asheville with me as well. And I think that's everything, but I'm sure that I missed someone.
That's quite a few markets. So basically if somebody's, you know, looking at some properties in any of these areas, they need to give you a call, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been really cool.
What's the best way people get a hold of you, Tyler, or Savvy Realty?
Hit me up on Facebook. I am a millennial on Facebook, still wearing the ankle socks. And, have you seen that? The ankle socks thing? That's how Gen Z knows that we're millennials.
Like, hold on, let's see if I can do it. Like these?
No, you're a Gen Zer. You're cool. You're sticking up with the trends.
Oh, okay. All right.
They cut off at the ankles. Yeah.
Oh, they cut off at the ankles. Well, I do wear those. Yeah, when I wear certain shoes. But anyway,
Hit me up on Facebook, Tyler Kuhn. That's the best way.
Okay, sweet. Well, thank you so much, Tyler, for being on the show. Enjoyed having you and being your friend too. So that's always great. But and guys, if you're listening to this, you have questions about markets, or the revenue management, please reach out to Tyler. He's a nice guy. He won't bite twice. I promise. And thanks everybody for listening. And I'll see you on the next episode.